And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations. The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, currently marking its 80th anniversary. Today, our program, An Introduction to Maimonides, is the first in a four-part series written by Mark Siegel entitled Poets and Philosophers.
Think back with me now, 800 years to the winding narrow streets of sun-baked Cordova in Spain. The hills beyond the city are lustrous green, where the orange groves climb upwards on the slopes, or gray with the lace of olive trees. The river winds 8 centuries ago, past mosque and minaret, past Roman ruins, yes, even then, past history. There is peace in Cordova and sun. Tranquility. A different time, a different place, and yet there is someone here for you to meet, for you to know. Wait. Wait. The 30th day of March, the year 1135. 1 o'clock by an ancient bell.
Rabbi Maimon, a boy! It is a boy!
Someone for you to meet. To know.
We will call him Moses. Moses Ben Maimon. A good name. A very good name.
Today we know him by many names.
Moses Ben Maimon. Moses, the son of Maimon.
Maimonides. A name which is part of the history of philosophy as much as it is part of the history of Jewish thought.
You will find it with Aristotle and Plato and St. Augustine. With all the names that chart the course of Western civilization.
Rambam, the name by which he is known to Jewish scholars and students.
Rambam, the great rabbinic scholar, the codifier of the law, the commentator. And he had still other names.
The great eagle. The mind that soared to new heights in the contemplation of man's relationship to his fellow man, his world, his maker.
A man of many talents. Of many names.
Perhaps the simplest name was the best. It tells it all. They called him the second Moses.
But it was not all orange blossoms and olive branches in his time. No, not even in the golden period of Spain. The sun looked down on an earth not yet polluted in its atmosphere. Yet in the air there hung the poisoned cloud of prejudice and persecution. No supersonic jets knifed through the sky, yet time was shorter. Men died sooner. No, it was not all orange blossoms and olive branches in his time. In the soul of man there was perplexity, anxiety, eternal questioning. Then, as now.
But how can that be, Moses Ben Maimon? How can a man do what he wishes?
Gentlemen, it is simply said. Man is given freedom of the will.
You do not believe that God decides at birth whether one will be righteous or wicked?
I believe a person chooses his way with his own determination.
But Moses Ben Maimon, there are forces that determine his action.
Of course, nature, the stars.
My friends, if a man decides to worship God, to acquire wisdom or to study, he may do so.
That is true.
If he decides to associate with the wicked, with thieves or with adulterers?
Yes, then what, Moses Ben Maimon?
He is free to do that also. Nobody is by nature or astrological elements compelled to choose either one way or the other.
But how can he control his doings, Moses Ben Maimon? Can anything be done without the consent and the will of the Creator?
Keep this in mind, gentlemen. Everything happens according to his wish, although the control of our deeds is in our hands. Thanks to the intelligence with which God endowed man, he is free to choose his conduct within the human realm.
Intellect and faith. He joined them together to make a special wisdom that survives the centuries. And if, as a scholar and philosopher, he delved deeply into the meaning of man's life on Earth, he could be simple and direct as well, providing practical guideposts for living. Sometimes, one suspects, not without a quiet humor.
The way of the prudent is first to select an occupation for his living.
Then to purchase a home.
And last, to get married.
Only the foolish marry first.
Then, if they have enough money, buy a home.
And later in life, think of choosing a trade.
Or living on charity. The right way of conduct is the mean in each class of man's dispositions.
A disposition that is equally removed from the two extremes.
One should neither be hot-tempered and easily angered,
nor apathetic like the dead. One should try to achieve the happy medium. Indignation must be justified by a serious cause and motivated by the wish to prevent its repetition.
Desire should be restricted to things which the body absolutely needs.
Further, one should not expend more effort on one's business than is required for one's livelihood.
And finally, a social note.
One should not urge his fellow man to come to his house for a meal if one knows that he is not able to accept.
In the brief and sunny burst of tolerance which cast its light on Spain in the first 13 years of his life, there was a legacy of 4 centuries of freedom for Jews to study. 4 centuries in which the Jews of Mohammedan Spain were free to worship, free to work, free to pursue the arts and sciences. Then, in the year 1148, Cordova fell to Almohades, a fierce, fanatic dynasty of caliphs.
An edict of the caliph!
Gone the golden days, the sunny centuries, in but a moment.
All inhabitants shall embrace the one, the true faith of Islam.
Rabbi Maimon, what shall we do?
For Jews and Christians, conversion or death.
Rabbi Maimon, what choice have we?
No choice. We shall pray, and then we shall leave this land, all who dare. With God's help, we shall escape.
For the Jews of Spain, the cities of refuge were few and far apart. From Cordova, they fled in secrecy to Morocco. From Morocco to Palestine. From Palestine to Egypt, where Rabbi Maimon and his sons Moses and David settled at Fostat, near the court of the Sultan of Egypt.
In Egypt, Moses ben Maimon, who would become a scholar, philosopher, and moralist, became first a mathematician, an astronomer, a physician.
This was his genius, to bring together science and religion.
The mind and heart.
The individual and society.
The body and the spirit.
This was his genius, the bringing together of opposites in a fitting harmony, a resolution of what man knows and what man believes.
Small wonder that in this our century, we turn to his wisdom still.
You say you are planning to visit me. You will be most heartily welcome. Yet my advice is not to risk the sea voyage. All you will gain by your
visit... This is part of a letter Maimonides wrote to Samuel Ibn Tibbon, a friend and fellow scholar, in the year 1199.
How should you expect to spend with me 1 hour during the day or the night? The tasks I had to perform...
He was at that time court physician to the Sultan Saladin, one of the greatest physicians of his century.
When the Sultan does not feel well, or when one of his children or wives is ill, I cannot leave Cairo. If nothing extraordinary happens, I return to my home in the afternoon, never earlier. All the rooms are crowded with people. I treat them and dispense prescriptions for their cure. The coming and going of patients lasts until evening. When night falls, I cannot speak for exhaustion. Such is my daily routine.
Within this routine, somehow Maimonides managed to write continuously. 10 books on medicine alone. But it is not for his scientific works that Maimonides is best remembered. It is as the Rambam, the sage, the commentator, the wise man.
Ours is a time of great disasters. Everybody feels the stress of the present hour. The wisdom of our wise men is lost. And the counsel of our scholars is hidden.
The words are part of the introduction to the Mishnah Torah, a gigantic work in which the mind of Maimonides searched out the heart of Jewish tradition and codified it.
Therefore I, Moses ben Maimon from Spain, trusting in God, have girded my loins to compile a compendium of the oral law as a whole.
His purpose was to make it possible for the Jewish law to be better understood by those who are not scholars.
Believe me, the Mishnah Torah isn't always so easy to follow.
He had something to say about that, too.
When I am troubled by a problem, and because of its difficulty finding it possible to teach the truth in a manner that will be approved by one worthy man and disapproved by 10,000 fools...
You see, he could be sharp.
I am resolved to impart it to the one, and not to be sensitive to the disdain of the great multitude.
And yet he was an affable man, a sensitive man, a kindly man.
I wish to help the one worthy man out of his perplexity, to show him a way out of his confusion, so that he may attain perfection and peace.
The question really is, are you that worthy man? Eight hundred years. The river winds and flows past wars and revolutions, shifting boundaries and changing forms of government, past knowledges of the infinite and probings of the universal. It flows to a sea that laps new worlds, unknown by man in the days of the years that the quill of Maimonides shaped Arabic calligraphy on wrinkled parchment. Yet listen to the words, today and now. But first, a caution from Maimonides himself.
Do not take matters as proved, because they are stated so in books.
Lies are committed with the pen as well as with the mouth.
Only fools will consider a matter truly proved if they find it in writing.
Things neither become more true if they are often repeated,
nor less if they are not repeated.
Advice on where and how to live.
Man's qualities and conduct are normally influenced by his neighbors and friends.
Normally.
And he follows the customs of the people of his country.
Conclusion.
One should therefore seek the friendship of the righteous and be always in the company of the wise.
So that one may learn from their deeds.
So far, so good. But let's go further.
If one lives in a country of low standards of conduct,
where people do not walk in the paths of righteousness,
one should move to a place where righteous people live.
And now, advice from a man who is the leader of his community.
But if all the countries one knows or hears of are wicked, as it is the case in our time,
Or if one cannot depart for a better country because of the fear of brigands or because of health conditions,
one should flee to desolate caves or deserts
rather than adopt the ways of the sinners.
There is something of interest, isn't there? To discover in words 800 years old an earlier statement of the common sense ideas we take for granted in our own time. But that is hardly the full value of Maimonides to our century.
Perhaps the greatest value lies in the discovery that much which we take for granted
deserves a closer look. Consider charity.
Consider it? I'm on every committee in town.
There are 8 degrees in the giving of charity. The lowest is when one gives grudgingly.
But I don't give grudgingly.
I didn't say you did, but listen.
1 degree higher is giving less than one should, but graciously.
I do give what I should, and graciously, whenever I'm asked.
Next in degree is the man who gives after he is asked.
Oh, I see.
And above that, when one gives, even before he is asked. Above this is charity when the poor know the source, but the giver does not know to whom he gives.
And there are higher degrees of charity than that?
Several.
1 degree higher. When the giver knows to whom he gives, but the receiver does not know his benefactor. And higher still. Is charity given where neither giver nor receiver know each other?
I think...
Yeah?
I begin to understand. But there can't be any higher degree than charity given in secret.
There is.
The highest. To make a gift or provide work which will uphold a man so that he need not be dependent on his fellow men.
So that he no longer requires charity. For all the sharpness of his reason, the brilliance of his intellect, Maimonides possessed the greatest of the attributes a man may have, according to Jewish tradition, the understanding heart. It shines through the most reasoned of his writings, this sense of tenderness, and it emerges constantly in the great work with which his name is most frequently associated, The Guide for the Perplexed. The Guide for the Perplexed was completed in the year 1195. Yet it was written for all time, for all people. Think with me now, not back 800 years, but to today and now. To here and now and the perplexity we face each day, each morning at the breakfast table. Perhaps your breakfast table.
Good morning, darling.
Morning.
There's no newspaper. They didn't deliver it.
Yes, I know.
What?
I called them Tuesday. I canceled it.
You canceled it?
That's right.
Oh, but it just costs a few cents to have it delivered.
I'm giving them up. I'm not going to read the newspapers anymore.
You're kidding.
Am I? I just can't start the day that way. I'm tired of it, that's all.
I'll get you another cup of coffee, darling.
I'm tired of the whole sick world. And if it's there, I don't have to remind myself of it every morning. Murders, divorces, Vietnam, Chinese, Mississippi. It's just too much.
Evil is non-existent. There is no such thing.
But Moses Ben Maimon...
What seems to be evil is nothing more than the absence of good. Just as darkness is the absence of light, sickness the absence of health, and poverty the absence of wealth.
But the world is full of sickness and darkness and poverty.
You will frequently find persons who hold that the evils in the world outnumber the blessings. Not only the common multitude errs in this, but even the wise men. They present the idea that if you compare the pleasures and happiness of man with the griefs, pains, afflictions, and troubles to which he is subject, you will conclude that human life is an affliction and a great evil.
Then what is the answer?
darling, you can't live that way. You can't block out the world.
I have to handle it the best way I can.
But you can't just put blinders on.
Enough trouble right in our own circle. Sickness, people breaking up their marriages, tragedy.
There are good things, too.
Well, it's a miserable balance. It's the best I can say for it.
Well, then maybe. Maybe the thing to do is to be grateful for what we have. Thank God we're well. And the children are well.
Oh, there has to be a better answer. There has to be. Then what is the answer?
If a man would regard the universe as a whole and try to understand how small a part he plays in it, he would realize that man is insignificant in proportion to the universe as a whole.
The error is to think the universe was created for one's own purpose?
Let us say that whenever anything in the world seems absurd, ridiculous, or evil, it is because we have but a partial knowledge of things, and we want things arranged according to our taste and our reason. But when we look at life and the world from the aspect of the eternal scheme of things, we will find that what seems to us bad and shocking does so only because of our lack of knowledge and wisdom. It is the possession.
What I mean, darling, is we don't know enough. We can't really see far enough. Do you know what I mean?
I know what I read in the papers. What more do I need to know about Mississippi?
Well, maybe more than we can know.
I don't get it.
I mean, well, how do we know? Maybe 50 years from now, when someone says that word...
Mississippi?
Yes, Mississippi. Maybe that'll mean the place that people finally learn to get along together. Or maybe when someone gets sick, that's really the beginning of someone else's figuring out how to keep other people well.
You really think that?
I don't know. It's just an idea. I'm not sure where I got it.
Each generation acts out its life with its own special dialogue, its own peculiar variations in setting and circumstance. For the problems of human beings change in form from century to century, but the inner content is likely to remain the same. Across 800 years, the beacon of faith and knowledge lit by a single man shines brightly in this time, this place, a guide for the perplexed.
The true perfection of man is the achievement of intellectual qualities, the possession of discernment, which leads to true opinions of the nature of God.
Seek wisdom, know God, and imitate his ways. Praise him for the vision of a time to come, a vision which, by deeds within your choice, moves toward places yet invisible, where doors as yet unknown swing wide to a world of perfect justice and of peace. That is the timeless message of Maimonides.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 25 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York, New York, 10027. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Rabbi Samuel Cheel, spiritual leader of the Malvern Jewish Center in Malvern, New York, and editor of the Eternal Light television series. Rabbi Cheel.
To the ordinary man, barriers are insurmountable. To the extraordinary man, barriers are but temporary obstacles which are made to be overcome. The greatness of Moses Maimonides lies in the fact that his inspired genius helped to overcome the many barriers life places before every man. Through his profound knowledge of his faith and his thorough understanding of the philosophy and science of his day, Maimonides was able to transcend the barriers that troubled men in the conflicts between their religious convictions and their philosophic probings. Not only in his writings, but in his life's work as well, he successfully combined the disciplines of medicine and the spiritual leadership of his people, seeking to heal men's bruised bodies as well as their troubled souls. So great was his philosophic contribution that his classic, The Guide for the Perplexed, became a significant influence not only in Judaism, but in the religion and philosophy of men of varying faiths and differing cultures. Maimonides was concerned with overcoming the limitations of men, whether due to their insufficient learning or to their perplexities in the quest for a meaningful life. His energies were directed to clarifying the teachings of Jewish tradition so that its wisdom and beauty would be available to every man. He believed that as the barriers to man's understanding are removed, so will man be able to surmount evermore the barriers that separate him from his Creator. And because Moses Maimonides was endowed with divine gifts, with brilliance of mind and greatness of soul, this universal man has even transcended the barriers of time and history. He enters with us the second half of the 20th century, speaking to us with the same vigor and clarity with which he guided his own generation, helping us to confront our own dilemmas with greater courage, understanding and insight in our own unending quest for greater meaning and lasting purpose in our lives.
Thank you, Rabbi Chiel. Our Eternal Light program today, an introduction to Maimonides, the first in a four-part series entitled Poets and Philosophers, was written by Mark Siegel. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured today was John McGovern as Maimonides, and co-featured were Marion Seldes, Court Benson, and Paul McGrath. Others in the cast were Lon Clark and Virginia Payne.
This is the NBC Radio Network.